Hey, welcome to the program. You know, I'm starting to get really familiar with you the more time that we spend together. I feel like we should, like, moisturize in a large tub together. You know what I'm talking about?
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Maybe that was a little extreme.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Awkward. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
I just meant that as an analogy, not that we should actually sit in a tub.
Whatever.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. I think I've covered it. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Surprised? Is this a surprise to you? Sit down, please. Oh, please, take a seat. Sit in my favorite chair, why don't you? There you go. Perfect. Can I get you something? Would you like something to drink? Would you like a beverage? Would you like water or perhaps a soft drink or perhaps something a little bit harder, like a hammer? Would you care for an alcoholic beverage? I've got everything. Oh, you don't care for anything? Fine. Fine. Forget I asked. Would you like something to eat? Are you hungry? Would you like a sandwich? Would you like a full course meal? Would you like me to lie on my back so you can lick whipped cream off my nose? Would you like that? Oh, you would. Kinky. Interesting. Interesting audience demographic. My kind of people. Welcome to the program. I am indeed Ron Van Dam. That's my name. You can call me that. I'm not wearing a name tag, so try to remember it, please. You know, I don't think that I'm losing my memory, so to speak, but I am starting to forget people's names for sure. For sure I am. I have no idea who you are. If I've known you for a number of years, I might remember your name. But if I met you once, like half a year ago or 10 minutes ago, I won't know who you are. I seriously really won't. If I met one of those cocktail mixers where all they do is just mix cocktails, and I love those things. You know, I'm with a group of people at a political fundraiser, a Ron Van Dam fundraiser, whatever the case may be, and someone says, hey, how are you? You're Ron, I understand. And I say, yes, you understand correctly. My name is Ron. And your name? And they say, Bob. I go, oh, hi, Bob. How are you? And then like 30 seconds later, Bob will bump into me again and go, Ron, you having fun at the party? Yes, I am, Steve, Jim, I know it begins with a W, Willie. I'm really bad at that, and I think it's because I don't focus. I think I don't really care what your name is, nor who you are, nor what you're doing here, nor why you're on the planet. I don't think I care about those things, and that's a fault of mine. I need to care about everything. I need to care about everything. Oh, very sad yesterday. The temperatures in the area in whence I have my studio was like 75, 78 degrees yesterday at the end of October. Very, very freaky. And a fly got into my house. I know. How dare a fly get inside my abode. And it was flying around, man. I guess that's why they call them flies, because that's what they do. Probably the most aptly named object on the planet would be a fly, because that's it. They don't perform any other function whatsoever that I know of. Their only function is to fly for no purpose whatsoever. They fly and they just fly. I never see them eating Although when I go to a restaurant, I do see flies, so maybe they do go out to eat. I never see them sitting down to eat a meal. I never see them. I don't see them copulating or making new flies. I don't know where they do that. I've never seen that before up close because they're like really tiny, but I still don't see them doing it. I don't see fly-on-fly action. I think all they do, I think their only function is to fly around. I don't know how long they live. I think it's like long enough to land somewhere. I really don't know. So I always try to capture the fly with a cup and a piece of paper. I've talked about this before if it sounds familiar to you. And then I walk outside. I take the piece of paper off the bottom of the cup, and the fly flies away to freedom to live another, 10 minutes somewhere else. I really don't know how long these things last. Yesterday, a good-sized fly. You know, there's flies, and then there's, whoa, is that a bird? It's a fly. The fly got into my bathroom, the only fly in my entire house, the only fly probably in the world that is inside something, unless you live in India or one of those countries where this flies all the time, or unless you're a cow. Can you imagine being a cow? Not only are you definitely going to be slaughtered someday, and someone's going to pull on your tits at least a couple of times a day in order to extract your milk, and I don't really care about my milk being extracted. I just don't want people pulling on my tits all day. And if I had more than two tits, and I think a cow has something like 16 tits, I really don't know, but that's a lot of invasion of titdom. So I wouldn't want to be a cow for all those reasons, although the only good thing about a cow is when you have to poop, just go right there. Who cares? You know, you don't have to wait for the stall to be available and vacant. You can just poop where you're standing. I mean, that's about the only good thing about being a cow. Other than that, it kind of sucks. The worst thing about being a cow is that they stand there and their heads are surrounded by flies. Same with horses. Horses also have that fly. Horses and cows, flies love them. If there was a cow horse perfume and humans wore them, there'd be flies all over your head all the time. Anyway, I don't even know what I was talking about. So anyway, I wouldn't want to be a cow because I got blown my tits. And I don't know how I got there. I have no idea how I guess. This is what happens to me. I start talking about something. I get off the track. And then I'm so far off the track, I don't know where the rails are anymore. I don't even know what I was talking about, so never mind. Man, that's pathetic, isn't it, huh? Isn't that pathetic? This is what you call stream of consciousness. And I think the stream just carried me away. I have no idea what I was saying. Whatever. I think it started off by not being able to remember names. How I got into flies on cows, I don't know. There was a fly that was stuck in my bathroom, and I tried to capture it, and it just wouldn't be captured. It was uncapturable. So I grabbed. I do about two or three radio interviews a day, and when I'm interviewing authors and people that wrote books, the agents, the publicists, send me the books to my studio, and I'm supposed to read them, but I don't. I mean, give me a break. I mean, seriously, I can't even read the directions on a bottle of aspirin, much less an entire book. I just don't have time. It's just nice to look at the book. I give them away to libraries and things like that because I'm a good person that way. So I grabbed one of these books that I was going to do an interview about, and the fly was on the wall, and I smacked the shit out of the fly. I felt horrible about it. I really did. The worst part was having to scrape the fly off the book cover. That's what was really horrible. No, I felt horrible that I took the life of a living thing. And I know, boy, I've talked about this 1,000 times. I take the lives of living things every time I have a steak or a piece of pork or something, or I don't know. It's a life of conundrums is what it is. It's a life of conundrums. All right. Now, how I got into a fly in my bathroom from not remembering people's names at a cocktail mixer, That remains an entire mystery. I could listen to the audio file again and figure it out, but to be honest with you, no. Every once in a while during this program, I'm going to ask you if you're having a good time. It's a rhetorical question. I don't care. But it sounds good to you. Now, you know that I can't hear you. I mean, I make fun sometimes and say, you know, it's a two-way thing. The NSA is, you know, bugging you and they're giving me your information. It's not true. I can't hear you or anything like that. So, it's just a stupid theatrical game that I play, so here we go, just go along with this. Hey, you having a good time so far? Okay, good. Okay, good. I'm glad. I'm really, really glad. Here's what's depressing me. And thanks for asking, by the way, what's depressing me. I appreciate that. Thanks for asking. Here's what's depressing me. The political system right now is depressing me. Depressing me big time. Every time there is a debate, whether it be a Democratic presidential debate or far even more depressing is the Republican presidential debates, I get teary-eyed and I get scared, because here's the thing: this Trump Carson thing, these two misfits of society who want to be president, I feel like I'm in a bad situation comedy with Chris Farley in it, and Chris Farley isn't even with us anymore. I feel like this is not real. This is a big, big joke. And now I'm starting to get scared, because this Carson Daly, this Carson Trump thing is actually lasting. It's like the flavor in the chewing gum is lasting far longer than it's supposed to. And now I'm getting scared that one of them could actually be the Republican presidential candidate. Wow. That would not only scare me and probably most of the country, but probably more so the rest of the world. You know that in other countries, they're watching these debates. They can actually see them, those that speak English. Maybe it's translated. I don't know. By the way, I think more people speak English throughout the world than do in the United States. Think about that. I think it's true. I have a feeling that's true. Anyway, sad. But I have a feeling it's true. In other countries, I was watching an interview from London with this London talk show host, the person, and it was abundantly clear that people in other countries find this Trump and this presidential campaigning of sniping and going back and forth and these low ball kind of insults, they find it extremely entertaining. They really do. They find it very, very entertaining as American, good entertainment television in America. But they are starting to get scared, like, whoa. I mean, the United States is very influential throughout the world. What are they doing? Wait a minute. This could be getting serious here. This could be a serious problem. And I'm saying that for both sides, Democrat and Republican, far more so for Republican, where there's, I think, originally 25 candidates, and they've whittled it down to 75. At the last presidential debate, Republican, CNBC, a financial news network, doesn't really talk politics, just talks finances. You would figure all the questions would be about finances and the economy. Well, they weren't. And even when they were done in a very accusatory fashion. They tried to rattle the candidates so that they would be sharp and biting, because that's good television. This is all still about good television as opposed to informing the public as to the views, opinions, and plans of the individual candidates. It's not about that. It's not about that to anybody, not even to most of the candidates. It's more about the entertainment factor and bringing in the ratings. And for this, the media has been chastised. However, be careful with your chastisement of the media, because the media does have a job, and the job of the media is to keep the information straight, to make sure that these candidates and these politicians and people that run our country don't do it blindly, that we're constantly checking on what they're doing. We're making sure they know that people are watching them. So the media does play an extremely important part of this democracy. When you get bad moderators, it doesn't look like that. And that's what happened. The CNBC moderators, the financial network, were just awful. Now, one of them was Becky Quick. She was one of the questioners, the moderators at this presidential Republican debate. And by the way, change your name, honey. Becky Quick sounds so much like a porno film. It's Rattle My Crotch, starring Becky Quick. Really sounds like you're in a porno movie, or you just have to be employed at a whorehouse. I mean, Becky Quick, give me a break. Becky Quick, give me a break. There you go. So Becky is asking Donald Trump a question, and this is the exchange. Here's the exchange that happened at the presidential debate. Becky Quick with CNBC asking Donald Trump a question.
You have been very critical of Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook, who has wanted to increase the number of these H-1B.
I was not at all critical of him. I was not at all.
So you're in favor of increasing
them? I have not been at all critical of him.
Where did I read this and come up with this that you were...
Probably, I don't know. You people write this stuff. I don't know where you...
Okay. Trump says he never said that. He never said a word about that. That was either a lie by Donald Trump or he totally forgot that he did. But it's not something he said in a campaign speech. It's on his website in writing in black and white. In the debate, Trump said over and over, as you heard, that he says he never said that. Here is what is on Donald Trump's website. It says, quote from Donald Trump, Mark Zuckerberg's personal senator, Marco Rubio, has a bill to triple H-1Bs that would decimate women and minorities. Trump says about that, that he never said anything about Zuckerberg or Zuckerberg being Marco Rubio's personal senator or anything like that. It's on the website. So Donald Trump, wrong. Donald Trump is never wrong. Donald Trump, you were wrong. You expressly said in that debate, I never said that. But you did, and it's still on your website today.
You have been very critical of Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook, who has wanted to increase the number of these H-1B.
I was not at all critical of him. I was not at all.
So you're in favor of increasing
them? I have not been at all critical of him.
Where did I read this and come up with this that you were...
Probably, I don't know. You people write this stuff. I don't know where you...
No, Donald Trump, she read it on your website. So there you go. I don't know. The Florida Sentinel is a Florida newspaper. Very big Florida newspaper, by the way. And it is calling for Marco Rubio to pull out of the race because he's not doing his job in Florida. His attendance record has been nil. He has not been doing his job. He does nothing for Florida except for go on the campaign trail so that he can become president. Similar situation with Chris Christie, the New Jersey governor, who is running for president. The New York Times, an extremely influential paper throughout the country, not just the New York area, the New York Times is calling for Governor Chris Christie to resign from the presidential race as well, stating that New Jersey is in a financial crisis and that Chris Christie is not spending any time or attention to the state in which he's supposed to be governing. New Jersey happens to be in a tremendous fiscal crisis to the point where it could actually be like going downhill big time. Before Chris Christie became governor of New Jersey, they had financial problems. And all these years later, Chris Christie was actually renominated. He actually won the vote and stayed on as governor for another term. His state is still in a free fall financially. It is amazing how a governor can run for president when the state from which he's governing has such a poor record. Not the case with Marco Rubio with the Florida Sentinel. His state has been turned around and done quite well, but Marco is not spending any time in the state of Florida at all. Here's the problem. These two have actual titles. They have actual jobs. Marco Rubio being a senator of Florida and Chris Christie being governor of New Jersey. So how do you run for president? How are you all in for running for president and leaving the job that you have? Now, that's a problem. And I guess there's two sides to every coin. But these two newspapers are saying these guys aren't doing their jobs. You know what? It's admirable for somebody to want to run for president. But here's the problem with that. It is an all-in campaign, and you have to be all in. You have to throw your mind, your body, your spirit, your time, everything into running for president. That's the way it's set up. That's the way we do it. If you have a job like governor of a state or senator in a state, I kind of think at this point in our careers, we have to say, can't run for president right now. I have a job to do, and I'm not going to let the people down whom I represent, whom I work for. I can't do two things at once of this magnitude. Running for president right now is not a good idea. It's not fair to the people who elected me into position whom I'm supposed to represent. I think that's the way I feel, I believe. And that's the way that many Floridians, and that's the way that many New Jerseyites actually feel. And I think they take priority to a candidate wanting to run for president. And that candidate can say all they want. I'm doing this for the betterment of the country. I would be the best president ever, and I'm doing this for them. I'm doing it for my country. You can't do it for your country right now because you already got another job. So you can't do it. And I don't buy that for the good of my country kind of stuff. You want to be president because you want to be president. Because your ego brings you to the presidential Oval Office. Ego is far more than wanting to fix this country. I think that's a bunch of bull half the time. All right, let's continue to fact check now. Shall we? Let's turn to Jeb Bush. This isn't a fact check kind of thing. This is a situation where here's a candidate that was supposed to be the Republican candidate for president. It was supposed to be a shoo-in. He's got the name. He's got a great record in Florida, everybody says. So he's supposed to be a shoo-in. But what does he not have? He doesn't have the showbiz personality. He's low-key. He says some stupid things, and I think that's just the Bush way, but it's embarrassing. Now, listen to this. This is Jeb Bush at this presidential debate on the CNBC. He comes up with a very freaky, awkward thing, and this is what he says.
To the point that you made to Congress, if you were president and you were offered a bipartisan deal that had $1 of tax increases for $10
you
of spending
find me
cuts,
a Democrat
would you take it?
You find me a Democrat that will cut spending $10? Heck, find me a Republican in Congress that would cut spending $10.
So you don't want the coach to put you in anymore?
Look, the deal was already done. The biggest tax increase happened under the watch of Barack Obama, and spending's gone up. You find a Democrat that's for cutting taxes, cutting spending $10, I'll give him a warm kiss.
Thank you, Governor.
I couldn't get that image out of my head for a long time. A guy giving somebody a kiss could even be another guy. And I don't know. I think that's just fine, you know, if you happen to enjoy that. A kiss is one thing. A warm kiss is, that's, I don't know. Warm to me is like a cup of cocoa. It's not a kiss. A kiss isn't like, that's just like, that's disgusting. I don't have an image of Jeb Bush giving someone a warm kiss. What's a warm kiss? That's like groping them with your hands on their ass or something, or smoke comes out of your lips. That is awkward. It's freaky. It's creepy. So now Jeb Bush has created the image of being creepy. And this warm kiss thing is going to follow him through the rest of his campaign. And once again, he is screwed up. Now, here's what I picked up even beyond that. This is a line that Jeb Bush's writers and campaign writing supporters wrote down for him and said, Jeb, get this into the conversation. It's lighthearted. It's funny. People will laugh. And you will appear to be more warm. We have to make you look more warm, Mr. Bush, Jeb. So I want you to not just refer to a kiss, make it a warm kiss so that people think of you as warm. Get that word warm into that kiss thing. And make sure you get that phrase somehow into this debate. And that's what he did. Now, I'm going to play this again and listen for this. You can hear Jeb Bush trying to get this clever little line about, if you find me somebody who will whatever, I will give them a warm kiss. He tries to say it three times. He's interrupted by the moderator. And you can tell it's a scheduled, planned thing to say, a planned little funny quip, because he tries to get it in three times, and finally at the end he does. Now listen how he is interrupted to get this written line into the debate. Listen again.
To the point that you made to Congress, if you were president and you were offered a bipartisan deal that had $1 of tax increases for $10
you
of spending
find
cuts,
me a Democrat,
would you take it?
You find me a Democrat that will cut spending $10?
And?
Heck, find me a Republican in Congress that would cut spending $10.
And? So you don't I'll want the coach to put you in anymore?
Didn't get it out.
Look, the deal was already done. The biggest tax increase happened under the watch of Barack Obama, and spending's gone up.
Okay,
you find
a
Democrat that's for cutting taxes, cutting spending $10, I'll give him a warm kiss.
Thank you, Governor.
Okay. He finally gets his warm kiss bit out, this written warm kiss bit. And then he's, you find me someone who's going to cut spending. Oh, I screwed it up again. But I'll get this warm kiss thing out if it kills me. I don't know, kids. It's just sad. It's just sad all over the place. It's sad. It's just sad. You know, this question about the media being so biased toward the left and those Republican presidential candidates at the last debate complaining that the media would be their enemies and the media doesn't want to see Republicans successful and that they do lean toward the left. I think Republicans have to ask themselves, why? Why does the media, which is supposed to be the public's watchdog, why does the media, if that's the case, indeed lean to the left? I think a Republican well might sit down and ask themselves, why would that be? Ponder that question, not if there's a motive or an agenda by the media, but as to why does the left win them and the right doesn't. Think about that.
Seriously, if this guy was any cooler, he would be pronounced dead. He's Ron Van Dam, and this is The Ron Van Dam Show.
It's pretty sad. It's pretty sad stuff. All right, kids, we're going to move on here. Do you believe? If you think things are so sad and so messed up in this world, in this country, in this world, are you not looking for a savior to swoop down from the skies or come marching out of the mountains to introduce some type of civility and kumbaya, some type of answer to all this confusion and chaos in the world? Well, there's one group that actually believes that there is. And we're going to speak to Betty Whitfill. We've spoken to a gentleman named Benjamin Krem. If you've been listening to the show for decades, we interviewed him numerous times. He believes that there is similar to a second coming, but not in a religious sense, in a real sense. Benjamin is quite elderly now. He's in some ill health, and other people are joining us in order to continue his prophecy. So let's take a look at that.
Yes, Betsy Whitfield here.
Yes, Betsy, how are you?
I'm good. Is this Ron?
This is Ron.
Good morning.
How are you doing today?
All right.
What part of the country are you in?
I'm in Texas.
Oh, Texas. Oh, then I apologize a little bit for you waking up so early.
Early is good. I like early.
When the sun comes up, you start your day. When it goes down, you end it. That's the way I look at it.
I agree. The body seems to be set up that way.
Yes. We were talking to Benjamin Krem earlier in the years, my listeners are somewhat familiar, those that have been with me for a while, with the concept of what we're talking about here, that there someday soon, perhaps now, will be a representative who will open up a light to ourselves here on this planet and help us take a new direction and a new attitude. And you refer to that person as Matea. Is that a solitary individual, or is that a representation of a group of individuals?
It's a solitary individual. Uh-huh. Maitreya is his personal name. It's a Buddhist name, yeah, meaning the happy one, the smiling one. Mm-hmm. And he is humanity's elder brother. Mm-hmm. He has been a human being like all of us at our level, and has developed spiritually to the point where his consciousness can and include the planet, and so he is a planetary teacher. Mm-hmm. But as a man, certainly, but as a fully God-realized man.
Right.
So he's like us. He knows what we have to deal with. He knows what it's like to be us. He knows our problems. He knows our dreams and aspirations. And so really is fully capable of understanding his mission, which is to lead us into a new civilization that we will build. So he's very qualified.
Yeah. Well, it's almost come to the point where it's beyond leading us to a better place. It's if we don't get led to a better place very soon, we'll have no place to come from to be led, because the situation gets dire. And I understand from my prior conversations that this revelation would take place at a time when there would be acceptance of it. And I'm wondering if that time would ever come, as people become more skeptical, more divided, angrier, etc. That acceptance seems to me to be getting further away from that point.
It appears that way, at least here.
Yeah.
The masters say, and Maitreya said in the October issue of Share International magazine, that Master's message was the world is ready.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, soon, very soon, men will realize the power that lies unused in their hands, that men are seeing and beginning to understand that freedom, justice, and right relationships are essential for our existence and are calling for change. Yeah. And this makes clear to Maitreya that the world is ready.
Yeah.
So what we're doing now is just basically doing the last bit of preparation, letting people know who still may not know what's going on.
Well, the world is certainly connected enough to take a message and to beam it all across existence. That we do have now more than we've ever had before, but we also have this incredible evil that seems to have just started blossoming over the past decade. So, the time is ripe, certainly, for that. And you believe that acceptance would be great because of the anger and confusion that exists now, that everybody's looking for any type of savior to grasp onto.
That's a very subtle point in terms of the Maitreya's plan, mm-hmm. what is necessary. Humanity, he says, must choose. We have to choose. Are we going to continue in the old way mm-hmm. and continue with war and destroy ourselves, mm-hmm. or do we want some new direction? Mm-hmm. He tries, and Share International tries to describe a new direction. Mm-hmm. But humanity must choose. We have to choose to never go to war.
Right.
We have to choose, as the Pope recently said at the UN, tireless negotiation, tireless mediation, tireless arbitration, mm-hmm. and give up our habit of war.
Yeah.
The tremendous issue of refugees has put a fine point on humanity's decision not to go to war. Many of those refugees from Syria are young men. They are prime meat for a war machine, and yet they are leaving. To me and to some others, that says that they are interested in their families and a life. And they are leaving their country for those reasons.
Well,
so Maitreya says there are enough, really, mm-hmm. he said there are enough people who have heard this, who have accepted what I'm offering, and we have now this very exquisite crisis on our hands in mm-hmm. terms of war and refugees.
Right.
We have in America, we have a political situation that borders on the bizarre.
Yes, we do.
and it's interesting to me that nothing is said about the U.S. in all of this. It is a very hands-off condition as far as the Masters and Maitreya is concerned, because in America, have we decided not to go to war? Have we decided for the future for peace? I'd like to think so. But it's curious. I guess we'll see when the new president comes in.
Well, I don't think that is the case personally, because both political parties, and there are only two, and they both kind of are not favorable, but they both, if you cross the line, they will defend their country in any way they have to. Even the Democrats were supposed to be the more progressive, peace-loving party, so to speak, if that's the case. Even they stay in battlegrounds and fear to pull out because of instability if they leave. So, I think the American people pretty much say, no, war has just gotten us nowhere, mm-hmm. and then some. But the political leaders say, no, we know better, and it's necessary in certain situations, and our muscles are being flexed by other nations. And it does seem like you need someone with intervention. Unfortunately, the Pope did visit the United States and other countries and was very influential when he was here and then left. And it's like, yeah, that was impressive, but we go on our merry way as we were before. It does take some, it's almost like a second coming, I think, is what we're talking about. We're talking about a peaceful Jesus here, I suppose. Yeah. Is that a good way of putting it?
Yes, uh-huh.
All right, so I we're looking for that. Well, I'm waiting.
Me too. I think it's there have been so many discussions now about the economy, mm-hmm. and, you know, one of Maitreya's points has been mm-hmm. that economy in collapse is not to be something that we look forward to, yeah. and yet it is through the action of market forces.
It's, oh, absolutely.
It's doing it to itself, but having said that, it does tend to sharpen people's awareness when things do not go well. And so that is another point in this
yeah.
Readiness that humanity is for a new direction.
In your talks, you referred to transmission meditation. What is that?
Transmission meditation is a really great service to humanity in which the people who volunteer to sit for transmission meditation also have a wonderful opportunity for their own spiritual evolution. People get together, they say something called the Great Invocation, which is a prayer that Maitreya gave out in 1945 when he announced that he was coming himself. And it is an invocation of the energies of love, energies that produce or inspire cooperation, brotherhood, synthesis, which are the Aquarian energies. And those energies are then brought together by Maitreya and some of his disciples and sent through the chakras of the group of people sitting for transmission meditation. In that way, the energies are sent through the chakras and they are stepped down in the group acts as a transformer in an electrical sense so that these high energies can be brought down to a useful level. It's sent out into the world, used by people to come together to act creatively and to become more brotherly, if you will. And that is a work that will go on throughout the Aquarian Age, and I don't know, maybe beyond. Mm. So it's a service to humanity, and as I say, at the same time, there's healing given. And karma is assuaged because we all have karma, and service is the great banisher or burner up of one's karma. So it's a very, very beneficial meditation. At the same time, it's totally free, totally voluntary,
yeah.
and we've been doing it here since 1985.
Huh. Is there like a world peace meditation day or something where everybody on the planet together at a certain hour takes their mind and through the sheer power of numbers actually exercises what you're talking about for a short period of time in unison? I don't know if that would have necessarily a physical effect. Some may say yes, some may say no. But it would be a demonstration of solidarity of those that want peace, hands down.
Yes, there is a World Peace Day annually. I think even the UN recognizes it.
Right.
There are groups all over the world coming from all kinds of directions, and people who are just individuals who will sit for that period and visualize world peace, say a prayer, and that sort of thing. I think it's good for knitting people together, having a sense that there are other people, many, many, many other people who are interested in world peace and want to get on with it. I'm sure Maitreya takes note of that.
Yeah, I mean, I love this particular country that we both reside in. But I think the term peace that's used here is done as a political device. I don't think there is interest in peace in the sense that to give up the richness of oil and gold and business and ego. I believe that outshines everything, including that word peace.
I think so. Still in our culture is so deeply ingrained, the competition, the mm-hmm. joy of the blood sport of politics, mm. The achievement of great wealth, the power that yes. we bestow on those with great wealth. Yes. Those seem to be typical American goals.
It is. It is. I mean, I wouldn't say unfortunately it is. That's wonderful if everybody plays by the rules, but it is a cutthroat situation, and that's how many achieve it. That's a problem. I remember as a little kid, I thought, oh, this is great, because every year our civilization will mature that much more to the point where in my lifetime I will see an incredible psychological maturity in mankind. And I must say, I think it went the other way.
Well, think of it this way, though. Perhaps the situation we're in America politically, that there is so much fermentation going on in mm-hmm. terms of political choice for this presidency, for example. You know, it's almost amazing that there's so many.
Well, there
many
is, but you know, it's unfortunate that I'm. I mean, I'll say his name. That a person like Donald Trump, an egotistical, never is wrong maniac, is the choice of the people that are angry at the way things are. I think that's healthy to be angry at things the way things are. But then they choose a man who is the embodiment of what they're probably angry at, and that's what floors me. The time is ripe, yeah. but you've chosen a rotten apple to represent you.
I know. I kind of look at them. There are so many candidates, and they reflect the fractured mm-hmm. nature of our psyche in America. Yeah. Everybody has an issue, and each candidate seems to reflect one issue. And perhaps we'll see an airing of all that over the next year,
sure.
we will finally, someone will come along. It's not a dark horse, then someone who can more accurately yeah. represent the whole, if that can be done. I hope it yeah. can be done.
I mean, if you speak to Maitreya, and I don't mean that in a sarcastic sense, let's get on it here, because I think the time is right, and I think people are yeah. looking for that, but I don't think yeah. anybody that I know of on our popular planet here is possessing that type of message, and I think it is a time for it. Anyway, if you could just talk to him.
Well, I think we are down to the wire.
Let's
I think he is watching. I think conditions are just about right for his emergence. I think the choice is being made and mm. being made for the existence of a future on this planet.
Mm.
I think awareness has grown in the world, and I really don't think it will be more than another year.
Mm. But by then,
we will be through this.
Yeah, but by then, this country, which is supposed to be the world leader and the biggest impression on the globe, this country will have chosen somebody that might not take that direction. I know that there's an entire political party that says climate change is ridiculous. There's no such thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, all this stuff kind of, in a sense, scares me that these attitudes still prevail here. So, yeah, again, if you just talk to him and tell him to do this, like, pretty soon, I appreciate it.
And you can, too.
Okay. Yeah, I will. And I will, believe me.
Good.
Okay. How do people find out about this subject matter? Because I think there might be some interest here.
We have a toll-free number, Share International USA. It's 888-242-8272. leave a message there and ask for further information.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to the internet at share-international.org. It's a huge international site, has acres and acres and acres of material for any depth research, videos, audios of Benjamin Krem's talk.
Good.
And those are the two best ways, I think.
Very good. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, I do appreciate it.
And hopefully we'll talk soon again.
Good deal. We appreciate it too. Thank you.
Thank you, Betsy Whitfield.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, whether you believe that or not is really not the question. I think what happens is that always in our civilization, always, not just now, you always have this hope. It's what religion is based on, is that there are things that are bigger than you are that can always blanket you with safety and security. It's like your mother, you know. It's like we all come from a mother's womb, all of us. And that's the blanket of security, and that's why a mother always makes you feel warm and fuzzy. I mean, unless she beat you, but usually makes you feel warm, fuzzy, protected, everything's going to be all right. It's hard to exist in a world, in a life journey without reaching for some type of security in something that's bigger than you are. And that's an example of it, that somebody or some being is going to come down from the mountains or from the heavens and always save us, no matter how bad it is. There's always this security blanket of comfort. It's kind of what it's all about. And again, I think it's what religion is really based upon, is some explanation of your existence and some great security that there is something almighty that can always shield you from harm. Ladies and gentlemen, I end this show on a fairly serious note, but hey, ain't my gig. I'll be back with you next time. Until then, I wish you peace. I dedicate today's show to those poor cows that always have the flies on their face.